Did you ever ask him whether he actually believed what he wrote?
Oh, no.
You never talked about it?
And there was no point in it because obviously he didn't.
Obviously he didn't.
Did you ever read a book of Shaw's called The Intelligent Woman's Guide to Socialism?
No, I never got to that one.
Read that and then see what you think of him as a thinker, for God's sake.
I'm used to his plays, and I've read most of those. Did you know Hammett and Hemingway?
Yeah, I knew Hammett, not well, but I knew him, yeah.
What's your contribution to detective fiction or American fiction?
I honestly haven't the faintest idea, and neither does anybody else. There's only one thing I regret about myself and my writing. As any intelligent man would have regret, I should think, that I don't know what condition my writings will be in 100 years from now, will they still be in print or not? Because that's the only test that amounts to anything. That's the only test that really means a goddamn thing. The little silly attributes of vanity, such as I get a wonderful letter from the Earl of Avon, Anthony Eden, about my books, or I get a love letter from Marlena Dietrich about my books. That's nice. it doesn't mean a goddamn thing. But boy, it means an awful lot as to what I have or have not amounted to, whether 100 years from now anything that I wrote will still be in print or not. Boy, that matters, and I wish to God I could know, but I can't. No, you can't, of course.
Well, you've been around this long, you'd probably be around then, too.
will you have a cigar?
Sure.
Wait a minute. I opened it here, as usual, a bottle of dry white wine at lunch, and of course there's some left. You want a glass of wine?
Sure, thank you. One curious phenomenon that I myself encountered and people I know. What is it about Nero Wolfe that is fascinating to people that aren't necessarily mystery lovers? I don't read mystery fiction, although now that I've read all of yours, or most of yours, I'm reading Dashiell Hammett. But I'm not really that much interested in reading other mysteries. Yet I'm fascinated. It's addictive. There are five of us that I know for sure that simply become addictive to reading all your books. What is it? And they're not good.
I'm a very, very lucky guy. Because all I had in mind when I started writing those stories was to write good stories. I knew I was a pretty good storyteller. I wanted to write some good stories. And that was all. That was the extent of my ambition or desire. Apparently, on account of some incredible piece of luck, apparently I created characters that will continue to interest people. Pure luck. I haven't the faintest idea why that's true of my characters and not true of somebody else's character. I don't know. So it's just nothing but luck. Of course, I'm delighted that it happened. And how do I know it happened? Because I still get letters, quite a lot of letters, from people. Not just about the last book I wrote, but about a book that I wrote 40 years ago, about Nero Wolfe, or 35 years ago, or 30 years ago. So apparently that character, there's something in that character that appeals to people and continues to appeal to them. I haven't the faintest idea why. I don't know.
Do they become real, so real to you that they have a presence in your life?
I can't say it that way. They're very real to me while I'm sitting at the typewriter writing about them. Are they real to me in the same sense that you are? No. It's a different thing. And probably that was true of every created character in fiction. That is probably true of Topsy who was in Uncle Tom's Cabin. Apparently there are different kinds of reality.
Yes, and because we speak of them as if they indeed exist, and indeed they exist.
I get many letters from people just like that.
Of course, you perpetuated that some by always referring to yourself as Archie Goodwin's literary agent.
Well,
The only other writer I can think of like that and similar is Conan Doyle. There are people who are fanatical Sherlock Holmes, and they don't, you know, they're not mystery people. Of course, you're a Baker Street irregular yourself. What is the genius? What was the genius of Conan Doyle and Sherlock Holmes? What's the fascination of that for you?
I don't know. I suspected in anything greatness. And I'm not talking about Nero Wolf now. That's too big a word for Nero. I'm talking about a certain thing in human endeavor, in human economy. The greatness apparently can't be defined. Apparently there is no way to define greatness or what causes greatness or what greatness consists of. I don't think there's any way of doing it. I don't know what it would be.
Conan Doyle was very much into spiritualism. Do you have any outside interest?
Yeah, apparently, aside from the story you wrote, Conan Doyle was a very ordinary person. But of course, you never know anything about it.
You consider yourself an ordinary person?
Hell, you don't know anything about anything, really, except your own reaction to it. That's all you really know about anything. Is that true?
Yeah, sure. Immediate reality. I think a favorite. I wrote my master's thesis on Leroy Jones, the black playwright.
On what?
Leroy Jones.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. And my upfront quote, my preface, was a quote from one of his poems. It was, "What I know of the mind seems to end here, just outside my face." that's it. You know, what I know of it is, well, there it is.
You see, I wouldn't say I think, therefore I am. I would say I react, therefore I am.
Speaking of Sherlock Holmes, another inevitable question. Do you believe, as Baring Gould conjectured, that Wolfe is the bastard son of Sherlock Holmes?
Yeah.
He is. How tongue-in-cheek was your Watson Was a Woman paper?
Oh, completely, of course. What the hell?
I see. But you're willing to accept Sherlock Holmes as your spiritual father, as it were?
No.
No?
I'm not willing to accept anybody as my spiritual father. The genes are the only spiritual father I have.
Well, speaking of that paper was used in an attack on you at the Popular Culture Convention this year, a paper entitled "The Androgynous Orchid or the Homophilic Misogynous Relationship in the Nero Wolf Tales of Rex Stout."
I never heard of it.
I have a copy of it that I brought for you. His contention was that you're a sexist pig.
That what?
You're a sexist pig because Wolf is a misogynist and Archie is a chicken chaser, and they have no regard for women, and therefore you're a male chauvinist, and this is evil, and Nero Wolf is reprehensible. How do you react to that?
Well, like everything else written about writing, it's probably a lot of goddamn nonsense.
Had you ever thought that in creating or having a character that was a misogynist and a character that was a womanizer that...
Well, Wolf is not a misogynist. At least I don't think he is. I think he just doesn't trust women. I don't think he hates them. I don't think he ever acted as if he hated them. I think he just mistrusts them.
I think one of the points of that paper is that there's an implied homosexuality between Nero Wolf and Archie Goodwin.
Oh, bullshit.
We'll enjoy that. Be amused at least.
The idea that the two men cannot be close in their daily contact and in their interests without some homosexual element is so goddamn silly. Mm. And quite so unnecessary. I mean, a homosexual means a sexual attraction, doesn't it? Is that what homosexual means?
For the same sex, yeah.
If a companionship has a homosexual element, it means that there is a sexual desire.
Mm-hmm.
Well, nuts. I think there have been probably millions of cases where two men have been close, both in daily contact and in feeling for each other, without any homosexual impulse.
Yeah, I think he ignored the obvious that, literally, the affair between Lily Rowan and Archie is a very mutual respect and love affair, and that Dal Bonner is a hell of a detective.
Anyway, you're talking now about what somebody has written about stories.
Yeah.
And nothing that anybody has ever written about stories means a goddamn thing. Did tell me anything that anybody ever wrote about a play or a novel that really meant anything.
Well, I've read some criticism that is saddened me.
What by whom and what?
William Arrowsmith wrote a great piece on Aeschylus. Oh, no, on Euripides, that I quoted extensively on my PhD exams, because he really illuminated Euripides for me. But of course, now am I thinking more of Euripides as William Arrowsmith or as myself? I see what you mean.
Well, you see, and people writing about the great Greeks, about Euripides or Aeschylus or Cyanium, are not really writing about plays or about writing. They're really writing about an attitude toward the human condition. That's really what they're writing about, and you can write about that, and you don't have to write about it in the form of fiction either, or in the form of drama. You can write about it and be revealing yourself, and that's really what they're writing about nowadays, especially any time in the last 1,000 years when they write about the Greeks, when they write about the difference between Aeschylus and Sophocles and Euripides. They aren't writing about writing in the sense of a little piece by Bunny Wilson about Hemingway is writing about writing. It isn't the same thing at all. The difference in the attitude of a Plato and an Aristotle is not a question of writing about something and how good the writing was. It's a question of an attitude toward human conditions, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And you can write about that, sure you can, but not about the writing. I doubt if this, who's this man that wrote this about Euripides?
William Arrowsmith. He's a translator as well.
All right. Was he writing about Euripides as a writer? Was he writing about Euripides as an attitude toward human beings and their problems?
An attitude.
Well, that's different. That's quite different. You can do that.
I can hardly... I can't seem to separate the two, though. It seems...
Oh, sure you can. Certainly you can.
How you write it depends on what you think or what you're writing.
No, you can write a piece about Bud Harrelson, either about him as an effective shortstop, or you can write about Bud Harrelson as a way of using human muscle. as a way of using human muscle and of attitudes that the human frame can take, which is a different thing. You can write about Bud Helson as a ballet dancer, or you can write about him as a shortstop. And they aren't the same thing at all. My liking to see Bud Harrelson stop a hot grounder in the hole and get the ball to first base in time to get the guy, to get this son of a bitch of a Brave that I want to see him put out. My liking for that. And my admiration of Bud when he leaps 6 feet in the air and spears a hot liner is quite a different thing. This is just isn't the same thing at all. I'm talking about two quite different things.
Well, what's the other thing then? The admiration for that? And
my admiration for Bud Harrelson in one way is exactly the same as my admiration for Nijinsky when he jumped through the window in that ballet. I saw Nijinsky do that every time he ever did it in New York.
It thrilled you just as much as a good and it thrilled you just as much as a good
boy.
Bud Harrelson leap.
Yeah, sure.
Speaking of popular culture, why no TV and films of Nero Wolfe? Why no TV and films of Nero Wolfe? I know there was one film with Lionel Stan.
Because I've declined now for 30 years, I've declined all TV and moving picture offers. I get them, I get two a week. I get 100 a year, and I decline all of them.
There was the one film, right?
That was in 1937. That was 36 years ago.
Did you write the screenplay?
No, God, no.
I know Lionel Standard was Archie Goodwin, and I can't imagine that.
That's right.
Because Lionel Standard doesn't look anything like I would imagine Archie Goodwin to look. Plus, of course, the irony was he was a communist.
I detest both television and moving pictures. And to hell with it, I just won't let my characters be used in those media. And I admit there's another reason, that most of the money I would get from it would go to the government anyway, so to hell with it.
You don't want that most of that money to go to the government, huh?
Hmm?
Don't you feel a patriotic duty to pay taxes? I assume you prefer it before
income
tax.
Income tax is not a patriotic duty, it's a necessity.
What's the necessity?
Hmm?
What necessity?
It's just that if I want to live in an organized society, I have to help pay the expenses of it.
Are you a patriot?
Oh, God, define patriot.
Well,
Do I love the United States, or do I love this country? You're damn right I do. Would I like to see it act in an admirable and honorable manner? You're goddamn right I would. And would love to help if I could.
Be nice if we could get Richard Nixon to come down to the old brownstone on 35th Street for a charade. Probably wouldn't come.
You know who's responsible for this Watergate mess?
Who?
You and I.
Really?
The American people. For us to let ourselves get into a position where our only choice for president of the United States was between one man without principle or scruple and another man without brains or balance.
Which is which?
Well, I think you know.
Yes.
Yeah. But it was idiotic. If we did nothing to prevent it, a man who did nothing to prevent it, all right, he's responsible. A man who tried to do something to prevent it, I tried to do something to prevent it, but didn't do enough, all right, he's responsible. So we're all responsible. The minute we had no choice but between a Nixon and a McGovern for president of the United States, we knew goddamn well, or we should have known, we'd get into some kind of an awful mess. If it had been McGovern, it wouldn't have been the same kind of a mess. It probably would not have been a morally condemnable mess at all, but it would have been a hell of a mess, an awful mess. He's a horribly incompetent creature, and his whole record showed it. Just the Nixon whole record showed that he was a thoroughly contemptible creature.
Despite this bad time we're going through now, what has been great about America in the 87 years of your life? What has been great about America? What is great about America? What do you love about America?
Well, a hell of a lot. I could go on for hours.
In brief. Is it possible?
Well, one thing that's great about America is that no American can really understand the English class society at all. We just don't understand it. Not that we haven't got it or we don't approve of it, we just don't get it. The attitude of a young lawyer, a competent, educated, able young lawyer in England who did not go to public school, his attitude toward the Oxford and Cambridge man, we just don't understand at all. We don't see how it's possible for a man to feel like that.
What's great about American art?
About American art?
We can see that Greece bequeathed unto the world. We can see that Greece gave us the great tragedy, and we can see that Renaissance England gave us Shakespeare and we can see other things. What has America contributed to?
I don't think you used the word great. I don't think there's anything great about American art at all. I think there's some damn interesting things about American art. In music, of course, the Negro contribution, that yeah. God knows is very fine, but I don't think it's great.
Yeah, sometimes that's considered the only American indigenous art form. But if Edgar Allan Poe wrote The Gold Bug, and The Gold Bug is considered the first detective story...
Well, I don't think a detective story is an art form. It's a technique. I wouldn't call it... I don't think it's an art form. It's merely one kind of fiction. Fiction is an art form. Mm-hmm. Narrative fiction is an art form, yes. But I don't think you can call a detective story in art form any more than you can call science fiction an art form. It's merely one kind of fiction. It's fiction that's the art form. Prose fiction.
Who do you admire? Who do you admire? And what? Who do you admire
in
now?
In what field of action?
Anything, today, now.
Oh, I admire a hell of a lot of people. I admire Eric Amber, I admire Earl Warren, I admire, I'll even go so far as to say I admire Rebecca West. It's kind of hard to admire a clever English woman, because God knows they're terrible people. But I admire Rebecca West, I admire Tennessee Williams. A very limited man, but a hell of a good playwright.
What about Arthur Miller? What about Arthur Miller?
No, I'm awful sorry. Arthur hasn't got it.
Why not?
He wrote one play that was fun to see and interesting to see, and I don't think he ever wrote anything else that was worth seeing or reading. I don't know what it was.
I presume you mean Death of a Salesman. Death of a Salesman? Is Death of a Salesman?
Death of a Salesman, yeah.
I'm writing my PhD dissertation on The Crucible. So I hope there's something in there.
On The Crucible?
Mm-hmm.
A shoddy performance. Thanks. I think.
Why?
Because it's no fun.
It's not supposed to be.
Oh, the hell, any play or any novel, in addition to whatever else it may or may not be, has got to be fun to see or to read.
Do you think, speaking of his, do you think that your books are capture the time as well as any history book?
I have the faintest idea. If they have, but probably they have, but if they have, only one tiny corner.
an obvious question again. What do you think of Simenon and Agatha Christie, your most close?
Of whom?
Agatha Christie and Georges Simenon, the other prolific.
Christie is a. Is there a possibility this will be printed?
I can cut it out if you don't want it printed.
I would like to have my opinion of another detective story writer printed now, because it would seem, I don't know, it just isn't, I don't think, I wouldn't like it.
Okay. All right. I should have. Back to you. Will there be ever be another Nero Wolfe book?
There's one being published next month.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so this is the first one since Death of a Dude.
Mm-hmm.
What's the title?
Please Pass the Guilt.
Hmm. Good. That'll be good news. The cookbook is out now.
Yeah, just being published, yeah.
Including the recipe for saucisse minuit.
Yeah, absolutely.
The spirit of Jerome Baron be in?
Sheila Hibben and I made that goddamn sausage 4 times.
Was it worth it?
No, it's awful good if you make it right, but my God, it ought to be good. The money you spend, time you spend on it.
Yeah, it looks
more.
Like it takes about hours. You can roast pheasant, roast pork, all.
Certain.
Well, I hope the spirit of Jerome Baron is pleased.
You consider how good baked beans can be, it's kind of silly to spend all that time and money on making saucisse minuit.
Do you feel did you have a legacy that you've bequeathed? That there was something, you know?
No, I don't feel that. I hope it's true. I hope it's so, but I don't feel that I have.
Hmm. In your 87 years, have you discovered the secret of life yet? Or the meaning of it?
It has no... You know, men and women have done many silly things, of course, over the centuries. Probably the silliest of all is to try to discover the meaning of life. Why the hell does it have to have a meaning? But why is there any more reason why the life of a man or woman has to have a meaning than the life of a tiger or an earthworm has to have a meaning? How can you possibly say that there has to be some kind of meaning attached to a human life that does not have to be attached to a life of an elephant or a cat? Why?
I don't know.
But we insist on assuming that human life must have a meaning, and what is it? And of all the silliest goddamn things, my God, it's silly. And so utterly unimportant. Life itself can be so interesting, sometimes so beautiful, sometimes so ugly, sometimes so exciting, sometimes so dull, can be so many different things. Why insist on attaching to it also a meaning, for Christ's sake? To me, life has no meaning whatever, except itself, and that's plenty. What a wonderful thing it is. Anything that can be as exciting, as dull, as interesting, as fruitful, as fruitless, as all of the things that life can be, and then try to give it a meaning too. Well, nuts.
I assume your life has pleased you.
It certainly has. My favorite, you know, last words, dying words,
mm-hmm.
by far my favorite of all of them, and I've read a lot of them, as everybody has, is Lady Mary Wortley Montagu. You know what the last thing she said was?
No.
She died in bed, not aged, but maybe in her, maybe 60, I forget how old. And at the last she sighed and said, "Well, it certainly has all been very interesting." and died. Isn't that good?
Yeah.
Had you ever heard that?
No.
Isn't that wonderful? It's all been very interesting. Well, that's it.
I happen to think you're a much better writer than Ernest Hemingway, who was much touted.
Huh? I knew Hemingway pretty well for a year in Paris. He was a very uninteresting guy. Got it. You know, there probably has never been a better piece of narrative writing in the English in America than one chapter of his in For Whom the Bell Tolls, a chapter about the three guys on the mountainside with an airplane over them trying to find them and bomb them. Wonderful piece of narrative writing. I mean, technically, as a piece of writing, my God, it's good. And then the other thing he wrote that is comes close to perfection as a piece of writing is The Old Man and the Sea.
Mm-hmm. Were you surprised when he shot himself?
No, I always thought he would. I think anybody that really knew him did think that. Hemingway wanted all his life a certain kind of thing that he couldn't possibly ever get. And I think it was fairly, maybe not obvious, that's a strong word, but I think it could have been thought probable by anybody who knew him that if and when the moment ever came when it became apparent to him that he would never get what he wanted, he'd kill himself.
Do you want me to go, or can you talk a little bit? Do you want me to go, or do you want to talk a little longer?
Well, I thought a half an hour would be almost too much, but I don't know. I still feel good.
Oh, all right.
And if you want to stay another 20 minutes or so,
I just remembered something I wanted to ask.
But if you're going to do that, you better reach for that bottle and pour yourself a little more liquid there.
Okay. It's pretty wine.
The wine?
Yeah.
You'll get better wine if you drink California wine, either white or red. Unless you're willing to pay $10 or more a bottle. If you're willing to pay more than $10 a bottle, you can get better wines, French wines. But all the decent priced wines, the California ones, are much better than the French.
I would imagine that people send you in letters intricate ways of murdering people, suggestions on how to murder people. Do they do that?
I get about one a week. The most amusing one, you're not in New York. You probably never heard the name of Robert Moses.
Yes. Parks Commissioner?
It was for 40 years a very influential and important guy in New York. Not only parks, but the Metropolitan Transit Authority and so on and so on. Anyway, a long letter I got from him a few years ago giving me in detail the plot for a detective story. It was just simply terrible. Out of it all.
I think the irony is that most of the murders in all the books I've read have been poison or shooting or stabbing or something, you know, the normal kind of murder, except Farrah Lance, which has got that intricate golf club contraption and the spike and all that. And that seemed to be a strange way to start out with the most far-fetched murder you could probably think of. Did somebody give you that idea, or were you playing golf one day?
Nobody has ever given me any idea. That is, has suggested something and I use it now.
What's the perfect crime? Have you ever thought of one?
No.
Is it possible?
It's a silly phrase anyway.
You supposedly have eaten everything that Nero Wolfe has eaten. You've eaten everything Nero Wolfe has eaten, is that right?
Oh, yeah, sure I have.
You've even eaten Methodist chicken and dumplings?
Oh, good God, yes. You're damn right. Yes, sir.
Is there anything about your life you regret? Is there anything you really regret about your life? Is there a book you've had?
Yeah, especially two things. The first, I would certainly do two things differently if I lived over again. personally, I would learn at a very early age how to play the piano well.
Me too.
God, I'd love to be able to play a piano. Not for to play for somebody else, but to play for me.
Yeah, I always say I have so much melody in me that I'm frustrated, you know.
I would love to be able to play a piano well. And now, in my old age, how wonderful it would be if all my life I'd known how to play a piano so that I could sit down and do anything to make some tunes with it. Mm-hmm. Or certain pieces, a little piece that I love so much. A certain Chopin prelude, for instance, that for some reason has always affected me greatly. And you know,
yeah.
Yeah, that's one way I'd change it. Another way I'd change it was that I would get in the habit of getting up early. Because the few times that I've been up at 4 o'clock or 4:30 in the summer and have seen and felt a summer dawn, I have realized that nothing in nature can quite compare with a summer dawn. My God, it's wonderful.
Mm.
And there are so many each summer, and God damn it, I miss them because I get up at 8:30. Has anybody ever, in words, explained why there is a certain kind of magic in a summer night that is never in a summer day? But what is the source of that? Because I think it's there, don't you?
I think modern man has become demystified with the weather. Or the
I suppose.
I don't think I care about the weather like I should, or the seasons. I think we forget that there are seasons, and to everything there is a season. Turn, turn, turn.
Mm-hmm.
We lose the poetry of the earth because everybody is concerned about technology, and we look upon weather as scales and dials and the barometer. Like I'm on the radio. I have a radio show, and sometimes I have to do the weather, which means that I have to go up and look at dials. And there's a certain irony that a lot of the weather people never look out the window, never go to the door and look out to see what's happening. They go just, and they do the whole weather from dials. And it's very often, it's been funny, because they've said there's a chance of rain and outside is a thunderstorm. You know. They haven't gone to nature to appreciate what it is. Now,
well, are we going... In the long run, are we going to completely disassociate ourselves from nature?
Well, I think you can do that. Well,
we've made a damn good start on it, you know.
Yeah. Is there any book that you wanted to write that you never wrote?
Yeah. I thought of writing 3 or 4 books that would have been a lot of fun to write and a lot of satisfaction, but I've never written them.
Were they so-called serious or rather non-mystery?
No, all serious. Oh. Non-fiction.
Ah, not fiction at all.
Mm-hmm.
About what?
Well, to put it in the crudest possible terms, has religion, and you know what I mean by religion,
yeah.
The belief in revealed, you know, religion. Has religion done more harm or more good to man? To me, it's a very interesting question, because so much of man's energy has been expended on religion, all kinds of energy. For art, for instance, look at all the cathedrals, for God's sake. If man, that you see is one tiny element in such a book. All of that wonderful artistic impulse toward beauty in the Middle Ages that man spent on the Chartres and Mont Saint-Michel and so on, would it have had some other outlet if there had not been religion at that time, or not? Did the fact of religion cause that beauty to appear? Or was it in men anyway, and it would have appeared in some other form if there hadn't been religion? Now that, to me, is a very interesting question.
Mm. You don't believe that if God did not exist, we'd invent one. Mm. If, you know, Descartes, if God did not exist, we'd invent one.
Well, of course, we, in my opinion, we invented him.
Yeah. Did you ever read the Bible?
Oh, yeah. I read the Bible three times before I was 10 years old. My mother made me. I say she made me. She wanted me to.
Did you read it since?
I read in it since, very often. I've read Ecclesiastes, and you know, I've read a few, some of it, and the Psalms.
How do you relate to death?
How do I relate to death?
You write about it throughout in all your books.
Hmm?
You write about there is death in every book.
Yeah.
And death is inevitable in life. How do you reconcile that?
If I were to list the things about which man has been and still is a jackass, death would be very high on the list. The idea of being so fearful of wasting so much nervous energy, fearing something that is inevitable, is obviously so goddamn silly. If there are any possible way, even one way in 1,000,000,000,000, of avoiding death, then I can understand that perhaps. But there just isn't. It's, as I say, it's inevitable. So for God's sake, why fear it?
I think that.
And why waste all your nervous energy having a horror of it, having a dread of it?
Do you have a sense of a creative, a superhuman force in the universe? Any kind of order, some kind of cosmic presence?
Well, obviously there's a superhuman force, because all the things that exist, we didn't create it.
Hmm. Is it active, or is it just there?
I haven't the faintest idea.
Hmm.
And I also don't think it's possible that we will ever know. I don't see how we could.
How would you feel if it was all revealed to us? If it was indeed all revealed to us, if we knew that there was, you know, a God up in the clouds, and we knew there was a life after death, and we knew all these things, would you prefer the mystery as it is now?
Well, you're assuming that you have to assume to ask that question that by some unknown means it would be possible to have complete knowledge of those things. Of course, I don't think that's possible. But if you want to assume that it is possible, would I like to have it happen to me? No, I wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be rather dull to know everything, don't you think so?
Mm-hmm. I kind of like life, though.
Hmm?
I like life.
Oh, my God, I love it.
Thank you for indulging me.
Thank you for coming.